The work with Ted came about because of three wolves. Three wolves that made clear that private lands really matter. The first wolf, the upper left corner, is a big male red wolf known as 140. That's me with my hands on his head and my bootlace tied around his nose. 140 wandered to private land on Super Bowl Sunday 1988, required us to go get him and bring him home, able to do that quickly enough that I actually got to watch the ball game. The next little red wolf down below is a little female known as 341. She was the first red wolf born in the wild in many, many decades. She spent most of her life on private land. Now you'd think, well, gee whiz, in the southeastern United States, that's not unexpected because most of the southeast is privately owned, even though we base the Red Wolf program on the largest wildlife refuge east of the Mississippi River, that being Alligator River. But nonetheless, then drift west to Yellowstone National Park. I had the good honor to lead the restoration project there. That's me and Doug Smith carrying a big male Red Wolf known as Number 3, moving him outside of the Rose Creek Acclimation Pen, in part because Number 3 had left the protective confines of public lands in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, the largest assemblage of conservation lands in the temperate world, and wandered onto private property and had to get brought back to the park and re-released. All of these animals made it clear to me that when I had the good fortune to spend time with President Clinton, it was important to emphasize the role of private land. And I implored the President to do what he could, and Secretary Babbitt to do what they could, to advance the prospects of wildlife on private land. The data are clear. Private lands are common in this country. They're common elsewhere in the world. Moreover, the spatial pattern is one thing. What we also know is private lands tend to be unusually productive. Much of the public lands, especially in the Rocky Mountain West, consist of rock and ice. This whole notion had great appeal to Ted, who at the time was the largest private landowner in the country back in 1995 and 1996, when Ted and I courted and gave rise to the fund and the biodiversity divisions. He was the largest landowner in the country. Now he's the second largest, with about 2.2 million acres in private holdings across a dizzying array of ecological settings, from Florida to Nebraska to Montana to New Mexico. With all of that, we gave rise to the fund and the divisions. They were philanthropies, and they aimed to do, as you can see on the screen, a simple task: to make private assets and private land and private efforts, in close cooperation with state and federal agencies, to make them matter for imperiled species. We have had great success. We have mattered for a host of species. We have stood since day one as the largest private effort in the world to redress the extinction crisis. We have registered a number of seminal projects. Our work with desert bighorn sheep in New Mexico stands as the most successful project of its kind in the nation's history. We have the largest, most robust effort on behalf of red-cockaded woodpeckers in the southeastern United States. We have maintained for many years, since 1998, the only private captive breeding and pre-release facility for Mexican wolves in the world. We have soon will finish restoration of native cutthroat trout in Montana and New Mexico across nearly 250 miles of streams and lakes. That's a scale of work that state and federal agencies have a hard time achieving on occasion. We have the only project in the world on behalf of the Chupadera spring snail. That's the middle picture. That's a rock. A Chupadera spring snail is about the size of a sharpened lead pencil. So all those little black dots on that rock is the Chupadera spring snail. We have the a magnificent project on behalf of black-footed ferrets, and recorded the first black-footed ferret born in the wild in New Mexico in many, many decades on the 8th of November in 2003. We have a mighty big program on behalf of the gopher tortoise and eastern indigo snakes in the southeastern United States. We have the nation's most significant effort on behalf of the Chiricahua leopard frog. And finally, we have the biggest and only effort on behalf of the Bolson tortoise, as best exemplified by this little guy known as 09DW1. 09DW1 was about that big. 09DW1, that's his name. 09 stands for 2009. DW stands for Deepwell, which is where he was found. And number one, well, number one stands for number one. 09DW1 was the first Bolson tortoise born in the wild in this country in 15,000 years. The Bolson is really a Pleistocene relic. You can only find Bolsons outside of our program in a very insecure, unstudied population in Mexico. We have had tremendous success, but all of our work absolutely convinces us that our task has grown only more important since we began over 20 years ago. It's clear that we need a fresher idea, fresher than philanthropy, for building out new initiatives for improving conservation of wildlife with a differential focus on funding. As we consider the challenge associated with developing these new ideas, we must acknowledge that the world we live in is unlike anything known to our ancestors. It's a very different place. From the sixth great extinction crisis to depleted ancient aquifers to widespread habitat degradation and loss to an atmosphere that contains 410 parts per million of CO2, our world is very different. Every time I think about how different the world is, I'm reminded of the thoughts that President Lincoln shared with the United States Congress before he signed the Emancipation Proclamation. He wrote, "We can only succeed by concert. It's not can any of us do better, but can we all do better? The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with the occasion. As our case is new, so we must think anew and act anew."